The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. You can find us on Twitter at Bastards_Boston. The Boston Red Sox lost the series against the Detroit Tigers, losing two of the three. Kenley Jensen was able to salvage the win in game one before we only were able to score a couple of runs against Tarik Skubal in game two and then game three. You know, we all know what happened there. So, being outscored 11-9, you're averaging three runs. I've already said it once before. If this team doesn't score a minimum of five or six, it's going to be really, really difficult to win ball games. That being said, I am your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from Los Angeles, California, by way of Providence, Rhode Island. You can find me on Twitter at Smith_MLB. Our other hosts for this episode are Jeremy Schilling, coming to us from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, and Terry Cushman, coming to us from Myrtle Beach in South Carolina by way of Windham, Maine. Jeremy, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And give me that special little number.
So you can find me on Twitter at JTShill20. Every week, more and more listeners are finding me, and I've engaged with them, and I've really enjoyed it. So if you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to reach out. And how am I doing? On a personal level, I'm pretty good. On a baseball level, I'm glad to have college and NFL football back because this is, in my opinion, over. I'm giving this a 3.6 on my scale. So, Terry, that's a bad number, just so we're clear. Anybody who's holding out the fact that this team's going to make a run, this series had to shut that narrative down. So 3.6 on the Richter scale, which is nothing. They stink. They ran out of resources, and that's, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but that's a specific individual's fault.
Yeah. A 3.6 on the J. Richter scale. Not so good. Terry, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you? And why don't you give us your number two? Because I don't want you to feel left out again.
I am my normal perpetual three. Now that I understand the scale, I can be found at Cushman MLB. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook and TikTok. I've been doing daily content on TikTok. I'm still trying to figure out the algorithm thing. But my smart ass takes are on there, and you can find us on Instagram as well. And I'm just going to say, as far as my temperature check goes, I mean, Jeremy's on point. You're not only 4.5 games back now from the Kansas City Royals or Twins. They're basically tied. But the Tigers are one game from us now, and it looks like the Mariners might have lost tonight. But they're just a couple of games behind. They fired their manager, and I think that's a very underrated move in a season. If you're kind of thinking about it, it just seems to energize a baseball team, and they go on these runs, and seems to be what's happening with Seattle, because I kind of had them dead and gone, and here they are, right behind us, and could have something to say about it by the end of September.
Yeah, you know, what you were just saying earlier, the Red Sox now are 70-67, third place. We're 9 games out. We are literally a series sweep away from being 500, which is incredible. Like you mentioned, fourth in the wild card standings, half a game ahead of Detroit, a game ahead of Seattle. It's, I mean, for those that still think there's hope, I just got to, you know, ask you what you're drinking, if you can share the sauce, because it's getting brutal game in and game out. It's not fun. Mariners did lose today. You are correct. They lost to the Angels 3-2. But, I mean, the Detroit series, like, that was one you needed to have, and you didn't get it. and it's, you know, it's getting to the point where it's borderline inexcusable. Without looking, where do you think we are in plus minus run differential? Jeremy, why don't you go
first? I think we're getting close to even. Maybe plus 10. Or I'm sorry, plus 10.
Plus 10. Terry?
Yeah, I would have guessed about the same area. I'll say plus 15 just to be different.
I would have said plus 10 or 11. We're plus 8 right now. We're plus 8. We're just a, you know, lips getting ripped off game. You know, credit Jason on that one. Game away from being even or under. It's really, really tough. And we aren't going to have an exciting end of the season. It's not like Cupcake City. You don't get to face the White Sox for, you know, 20 straight. That'd be great, but that's just not going to happen. So without further ado, we sadly do have to start off with our duds. Terry, why don't you go first with this one?
I'm going with Rafi Devers. And, you know, you look at this skid throughout the month of August. I forget what the final total ended up being, but we were well under 500 for the month. Several games under 500, I should say. And he just hasn't really been healthy or locked in at the plate. And maybe it has something to do with health. He did miss a couple of games due to his shoulder, which has kind of been nagging him this year. But you go back three series ago, he was 2-for-8. Then in the last one against the Toronto Blue Jays, 1-for-9. And that was while he missed 2 or 3 out of the 5 games. Then in this series against the Tigers, 1-for-13. So this is probably going to end up being one of his worst slumps in multiple years, I would think. So it's just hard. I mean, for the people that are just clinging to the slimmest of hopes for us to make it into the month of October, you need Devers essentially at least getting back to his career averages. He's well above his averages before this slump happened. This by far probably the best year of his career. And he just hasn't been giving us anything. And, you know, Duran was okay this series, but he can't carry the team on his own. And it's just disappointing to see. I mean, obviously we can't kill Rafi. I mean, the dude's a professional. You're not questioning the effort at all, but it's been a rough few weeks for Devers.
Jeremy.
Yeah, so on that last part, he must really be nicked up to be missing games, knowing how important they are. There's Terry opening his 300 milligram
energy
drink at 9:52 p.m. in the middle of my take.
180 milligrams, Jeremy. Don't make me be completely irresponsible here. It's delicious, though.
All right, so he must have really been hurt, okay? And Devers, in the beginning of the year when the games meant nothing, or not nothing, but literally, you know, at the point where you would take the time off, came back earlier in the year from a knee injury. That actually was a bad idea because he then had to go back and miss more time. So I don't ever doubt when he misses a game under those circumstances, it's because he's hurt. And that's concerning because there's no other down. He can't take any other downtime. So that's a problem. He's not going to be healthy, I assume, till the end of the year. And I assume he's going to have some sort of procedure in the offseason on one or both shoulders. So he's playing hurt. And I assume that's part of this series, 1-for-13, 4Ks. He's offered nothing. And the problem with Devers is if he's not hitting the ball hard and in play, he doesn't affect the game. Other than negatively if he boots a ball or two, which he didn't do. Duran, on the other hand, when he's limited, he's still affecting the game. So it just becomes even more of a microscope when it's Devers. Love the player. He's had a great year, and I know he's been hurt, knee and shoulders, and he's battled and played, and I think he's just going to be limited the rest of the way. I would not expect him to catch fire, given the fact that I do believe he's hurt.
Terry?
Terry already went. Charlie, I'm going to toss it over to you here for your take.
So here's the thing about Devers. he is one of the most important players on this team. Terry, I apologize. I'll let you had a finger up for a second. He's one of the most important players on this team. He can have an 0 for 13, 0 for 14 series twice in a month, and it's still difficult to put him in the dud category. For the month, not counting today, and today he did go 1 for 4, so he was able to lift that batting average up. 22 for 101 on the month. So that's 218 batting, 4 homers, 11 RBIs. As you mentioned, Jeremy, not doing well, not feeling great. It's difficult, but I think you should prioritize his health over anything else. At what point are we going to say, okay, you know what, Rafi, sit out the rest of the season. There's 30 games. It's not working. You're not healthy. I hate seeing you wince. When you drop the bat abnormally. Clearly, you're favoring one side of your body over another. It's uncomfortable to watch for us. I can only imagine how uncomfortable it is for you. That being said, the soft toss is over from third. There was one game, and I don't remember what inning of which game to be completely transparent. I think it was two or three straight plays, and it was three different kinds of throws from Rafi Devers, and that cannot be easy. When he drops the bat with the opposite hand after a really aggressive swing, and he doesn't gingerly swing that bat. He swings for the downs every single time. It's really, really uncomfortable to see him kind of like wince because you see one cheek full and, you know, the eyes kind of squint and you know he's in pain. He just doesn't want to say anything because he's trying to be a trooper. Guess what? At this point, three games over 500, we are not going to win the division. We are not going to win a wild card spot. Take the rest of the year, rest up. If you want to pinch it and you feel good, go for it. But it is not worth injuring you and making it worse for the offseason. These games, at the end of the day, do not mean anything. Games 1 through 162 prep you for the next stage. If you're not going to go to the next stage, there is absolutely no reason to risk further injury. I do not want to hear that he blows his shoulder and is going to be gone for 4 to 6 months and then misses the beginning of next year and then rushes that recovery and is out for 6 more months. There's absolutely no point. So I'm completely okay saying, Rafi, thank you. No, thank you. Call it a season for him. Anything you got? Yeah, Terry, there we go.
So the one chance he had to really contribute was what ended up being the final at bat in game two. O'Neill walks, Devers can possibly have a big hit there. I don't know if O'Neill can score from first, you know, if he rips one up the gap, but if it goes over the fence, that's, you know, that would have been great. Secondly, Masataka Yoshida didn't start that game. And, you know, it was against a lefty, so, you know, it makes sense. But why not just DH Devers? Why not just DH him, kind of somewhat give him a game off?
He's still struggling, Terry. He's hurting when he's swinging the bat. He's hurting when he's throwing the ball. Watch the last couple series when he takes the really, really hard hack. When you watch that swing, you see him wince and kind of take an extra couple seconds in the batter's box, kind of walk around for a second. And he does this little squinty thing with, again, one cheek filled up. He's not well. And here's the thing. Again, what's the purpose? We're going to just have him play for the remainder of the year to come in third place, maybe fourth place. We're not getting a wild card spot. Why risk the injury? He's not well. I hear what you're saying.
It just minimizes
to be the DH.
It minimizes the risk is all I'm saying.
And do you know what would eliminate the risk? Benching him for the year.
Well,
put him on the IL and bring somebody else up. If you really want to eliminate the injury.
I'm not saying I hate that, but I don't know if Breslow and ownership are ready for the optics of it at this point.
I agree with the sentiment, Charlie. I just think you wait until you're mathematically eliminated if it's like the last week of the season or when it becomes painfully obvious. So if you get swept and you're 7.5 games out in the next couple of games, then that's the time to do it. You're not coming back from 7.5 on September 5th. So if it becomes painfully obvious with 20 games left or they're mathematically eliminated in the last week of the season, I totally agree.
Jeremy, have you been watching? We're 7.5 games out. We are mathematically out of it. Unless you have a crystal ball, There's no way that the Boston Red Sox.
Well, four and a half out.
Four and a half from the wild card.
Four and a half from the wild card. Do you think that we're going to make up five games?
No, but you still have a chance to. I agree now on this point. Now the optics are not good. You already punted at the deadline.
You can't
take Rafael Devers. If he's able to go now, look, if he's can't go, then that's a different thing. But as of right now, he's saying he can play. I don't, if the player's saying he can play, then he should play until it becomes the organization's decision. And that's what I'm talking about. But taking him out now, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, Charlie, but I think it's a two-game set against the Mets. Let's say you win both those games and then go take the next series and you find yourself 2.5 back with 20 games left. I mean, you're in it. Sure. I just don't think that's what's going to happen. So if it goes the way I think it's going to go, you split with the Mets, lose the next series, all of a sudden you're 6.5 back, 7 back. Yeah, I think it's time.
So we would rather just postpone the inevitable. I mean, it's fine, but I mean, Devers did just go 1 for 13. 0 for 4 against Skubal, giving you the benefit of the doubt he went 1 for 9 against two other pitchers or starters and assorted relievers. I hear what you're saying. I don't think you're wrong. Like you're accurate in your take. But the issue is I'm thinking about the long-term picture of the Boston Red Sox because 2024 is not shaping up the way that we wanted. You already mentioned the punting at the deadline. And I'm going to go one further and say punting before the season started because we didn't really retool and reassess the issue. On top of that, we traded Chris Sale for a guy who's in our minors and are paying another team $16 million to have him pitch on another team.
17. Don't forget that extra mil.
Sorry, my bad. I thought it was $16 million. Was it 17?
17 milli.
Wow. Yeah, that's great. And Chris Sale is going to win the NL Cy Young and the Comeback Player of the Year. So if you like spankings, how about two for the same situation? I just the Mets situation could go one way or the other. But if you look at, as you already mentioned, you expect us to get swept or lose that series, the one after the Mets. Is that correct?
Well, that's the White Sox series.
I didn't say that's what's going to happen. I'm saying hypothetically.
Terry, is there anything else you want to say?
I haven't looked at the pitching matchup. Using Sale and shutting down Devers is really conflating the issues. I mean, talk about two things that don't relate.
I'm just talking about the fact that we punted before the season started. You mentioned punting at the deadline.
Oh, that part of it.
We've been punting all season.
I know, but
fourth and long.
And look, I do think it's over, but right now we're 4.5 back with enough games to make it happen. I just think what Jeremy is saying here is
we're still in the hospice phase. The funeral's not planned yet. Yeah. Okay. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
Right. So basically what we're saying indirectly is that we are starting a GoFundMe to kick ourselves in the rear because it's coming. We just don't want to say
if he gets hurt. Yeah. If he gets hurt and he needs surgery and can't be ready for the start of next season, you're going to blow out your chest and probably rightfully so. I know he's hurt. I don't think he needs.
Steven owes two in the swear jar. I'm going to owe hundreds of dollars in the swear jar if that happens. And I don't want to say I told you so.
I was the only one who didn't swear.
Terry swore 2 minutes before the episode was over. I heard it.
Did I?
You most certainly did. Oh, and then I didn't you admitted think I did. To it. And Steven. No, not the most recent one. Steven dropped the. Yeah. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It's immaterial. Right. But what I don't want to do is have a told you so moment. You know, it's like that Master Wayne on that day, I won't want to. We all know how much you want to tell me. I told you so. I don't want to be that person that says told you so. I really don't. I don't want to be the bearer of absolute rubbish news. But that's what's going to happen if we're going to continue forcing players to. I mean, we're already resting starters. We're having starters miss a possible spot or miss an entire time in the rotation because of innings and whatnot. I'm totally cool. I'm good benching Devers for an entire series then or every other game until he's better, whatever. I don't care. The second he starts to say, yeah, I'm starting to really feel shoulder pain, I'm not going to make you play. There's absolutely no reason to make you play. There's no reason. So the Los Angeles Dodgers had a fun statistic. They had no players that were non-pitchers on the IL. Man. Imagine what our team would have been like if we didn't have any players on the IL, both offensively and in the rotation. It'd be amazing. But here's the thing. When you start the season with eight or nine starters and you spend a lot of money to bring in a lot of talent, you can afford to take a couple shots. The Red Sox are taking shots to the pants and didn't have backup pants. So, you know, it's a tough situation that we're in right now. I don't like disagreeing, and I don't like being negative about a situation like this, but I'm not going to sit here and say, oh yeah, the Red Sox got it. It's in the bag. It's not. So, if Devers goes in another one for the series, it's going to be a rough show for the other three, Terry and friends. So it'll be tough. That being said, Jeremy, who was your dud on this one?
Tristan Casas. 1 for 11, 2 strikeouts. He did have an RBI in the first game and a walk in the third game. So he reached base and a hit. So he reached base twice. Duran's 5 for 13. We're going to talk about him. But between the other members of the middle of the lineup, Casas 1 for 11, Devers 1 for 13, O'Neill 1 for 6. You know, we scored 9 runs in this series, 7 in the first game. It's not, I mean, that was a, and Scooble was like, it was a total shutdown. Like when I picked up the game, I'm like, this guy is total command. We're literally guessing. And it was just so painfully obvious, the result of that game. So, you know, he shut down the whole lineup. But, you know, I'm not going to get into some of the extra, you know, stuff with his personality, but it doesn't play as well when he's 1 for 11. I'll tell you that. And I know that's not a popular opinion on Twitter, but all the look at me stuff becomes really obnoxious when you're 1 for 11. So,
yeah, I know that's going to get torched. Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great series for him. I don't know what Dom Smith is doing in St. Louis or wherever he ended up, but at the end of the day,
Cincinnati is where he went.
Oh, Cincinnati.
He's in Cincinnati.
Oh, that's a good spot. But, you know, I guess I don't really have a ton to add. I mean, he did drive in a sacrifice run in game one. And wasn't really striking out. So, I mean, it's not like he's lost at the plate or anything. He's just not putting the ball in play, probably not healthy either. I think he's probably less healthy than Devers even. And, you know, he's still trying to make it work, but not a great series for Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's Jeremy, I think it was you that said this, and I could be wrong. I could be mistaken, but if you're having the series of your life, every series, I don't care if you want to dress up as a dolphin. I really don't care. I really don't. But when you go 1 for 11, yeah, you had a couple of, you know, couple of interesting at bats. You're, you know, drawing walks. You're having a couple of RBIs in a series. That's fine. But I've said this multiple times before, and I really want this to sink in. If this team does not score 5 or 6 runs, we will not win the game. It is as simple as that. If your 1 through 5 have 2 or 3 guys in a game that are hitless, game one, Casas, Devers, O'Neill, 0 for 13 with an RBI and 4 strikeouts. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. Can't have it. When Duran and Abreu are doing everything possible, they go 5 for 9. Duran had a great first game. You cannot afford to leave men on base like this. And believe me, O'Neill's been really frustrating with the strikeouts. I mean, there's a 50% chance, like rolling the dice, he's going to strike out in a game. But in each of these games, there were major gaps. Now, game two is an anomaly because you're facing Tarik Skubal. You know, 1 through 4, you go 2 for 15. The only hit you have is Tyler O'Neill's solo home run. That's literally it. Everything else, irrelevant. 4 other strikeouts. Bottom of the lineup, 2 for 15, 4 more strikeouts. Game three, again, your top 3 guys, 1 for 12. Forget about scoring 6 runs. You can't even score a run. Like, it should not be this difficult. This team has moments of talent. They have moments of overachieving, and I get it, but man, oh man, the highs are really high in Boston and the lows are really low. When you score one run in back-to-back games against Detroit, not to say they're the worst team in baseball, but I think we're better than Detroit. I mean, subtract Tarik Skubal, we should have won two out of these three games. You know you're going to lose a Skubal game. Steve is a gentleman and a scholar and really, really positive thinking we're going to sweep, but not against Skubal. I can't. I'll be wrong five times in a row if he loses five games and not feel bad about the pick. He's that good. But the antics with Casas, I want nothing to do with an extension on him. I want no part of an extension. Terry, I know you mentioned it once before. You know, 7160 or 7150, lock it up, get it done. Maybe more money. Guess what? His weirdness and just like, you know, moments of borderline irrelevance, not really helping the case. And on top of that, the cherry on top, the injuries. If you swing too hard, you're going to spend a significant amount of time on the DL, IL, whatever you want to call it. So again, do whatever you want. If you can walk the walk and talk the talk, but if you're not doing it, please don't be a distraction. Just don't do it, because it's taking away from the players that are actually trying and working really, really hard. And you're starting to look like a complete, you know, buffoon. And Casas isn't stupid. He's just weird. I think Nick mentioned on the last show he did face Tristan Casas when they were younger. Did I get that right? Did I hear that right? Or was it somebody else?
No, that was, yeah, that was Nick Diamond. Nick Diamond when they were in Little League or something.
Right.
They were.
But he was weird then too. So maybe that's just part of his character. I don't know. But still, at this level, you have to know with the thousands of eyes that are on you, they're going to be like, dude, you don't even know what's going on and you're not hitting. So maybe if you spent more time hitting and practicing and not, I don't know, suffocating yourself with a mask and, you know, allowing oxygen to go to your brain, you would do better in a series. But I'm over the weirdness. I really am. Anything else that either one of you guys want to add?
Well, AJ Pierzynski apparently within the last few days was on Ken Rosenthal's podcast called Foul Territory. And he thought Casas's act is getting old. And I think to some degree it can be, but you know, the performance hasn't really suffered from it as far as I can tell. I kind of agree with Charlie. I'm a lot less motivated to extend him now. And it's got more to do with health. Like, I don't trust that he's going to be healthy. Last year was the healthiest year of his career, whether it was professional or in the minors. Like, he does have a history of injuries. And I mean, if we signed him to an 8-year deal tomorrow, it would probably be worth a lot more than what Rafaela just signed. But if it happened, I mean, I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't criticize it, but I'm a lot less motivated. And if a trade happens this winter, I'd rather trade Casas alone in a 1-for-1 deal than trade 3 of our other prospects for someone else. I just think that would be my approach, but we've got all these lefties, which Breslow doesn't seem to care about. So we'll see, but it'll be interesting to see if there's any rumors this winter. I don't think there's any chance he gets traded, but are there rumors? Is Breslow taking phone calls and, you know, just kind of testing the market? That to me will be something that's interesting to watch.
I don't know if there's going to be anybody that says, oh yeah, sure, we'll take Casas. We love what he brings. You know, missing quite a few games, dressing up as a fake superhero. You know, God knows what else he does behind the scenes. I have no clue. But the moments and the opportunity of making a move with, you know, say Toronto, Vlad for Casas, absolutely not happening. Not happening. That's gone. That opportunity is way out the window now. You'd have to pay them $17 million to take Casas too. I don't see it happening. He's got, you know, Vladdy's got, I think, arbitration. He's ARP 4 next year. So making a move, your Casas would possibly be a part of that package. Toronto may say, nah, we're not interested. If that's the case, we're not getting him. Like, there's got to be a way to move Casas in order to get somebody like that. And it's going to be one of those, someone's going to buy low and say, he's kind of got some weird quirks. I don't know. I'm not sure if it fits. So that's my two cents on that one. Anything else you guys want
to
add?
He needs to go off in September. Like, we need to see that from Casas. And I don't know what the malfunction is, if it's just, you know, he's just trying to make some adjustments and that's all it is. Or perhaps it is a little bit of health, but
right.
But it's in everybody's best interest if he has a huge month, regardless of what the Red Sox do. Because I think a healthy Casas, you could do a one-for-one for a guy like Vlad, or, you know, a Pete Alonso-type guy. We're about to see him. He's going to be a free agent anyway, but let's say he had a year or two left. Like, that would be a possible scenario. So either way, I mean, Casas is probably not in the top five of major Red Sox concerns right now. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, of course. Not 100%. Cool. Let's move in. Next one, this is going to be mine. And every single time he comes to the mound, I'm nervous. Brandon Bernardino, I'm just out. And I've been saying this for a little while now, but every single time he comes to the plate, or excuse me, comes to the mound and he's facing someone at the plate, I don't see him as confident unless he's playing a game where he's up by four runs or five runs. So I'm going to get Raz and say he had nine strikeouts in four innings right before that. Guess what? Memories are short. You are remembered for how you performed last. And in your last two appearances, three appearances, you haven't been pretty. I don't care that you went two innings and you only allowed one run. You gave up a home run that brought the game within one. We had that one in the bag. That game should not have gone to extra innings. And granted, you know, Kenley didn't do himself any favors, but that home run to, was it Carpenter? I think it was Kerry Carpenter in it. Oppo
it was.
To
left. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, that was disheartening. That was really hard to watch because I sat there like, great. I don't blame anyone who says, yep, I put money on it. This is going to go to extra innings now. Why? I don't trust him. He is not someone that I have any faith in. And in two innings in this series, three runs on two hits, you know, yeah, struck out four guys. You walked one, but you're just not it. I cannot stress that enough. I mean, this month has been atrocious for him. Got an ERA of 7.5 before action today. And granted, his ERA went down because he didn't allow a run, but your ERA is 7.5. And the crazy thing is, it's better than last month when he was at 11.12. Like, that's the thing that really, really is disappointing. He's not someone you can count on. And at this point, if he's coming into the game at any point, you're just trying to make the game exciting. The game's tied, we're going to lose that game. If we're up by two or three, there's a chance it could be tied. If we're up by five, you just need an arm to pitch. That's it. And, you know, it sounds crazy, but you know what, man? I miss Dom Smith pitching. I know it wasn't pretty, but I'd rather see Dom Smith than Bernardino or a couple of the other guys that we had. This ain't it. Terry, go ahead. Go first.
Since the All-Star break, any guesses as to what his ERA is?
9.5.
I'm guessing it's at least eight. Yeah, eight or nine.
You guys are in the ballpark. 8.27. And that's not a small sample size either. He's pitched in 20 games, 16 and one-third innings. His whip is 1.84. And his batting average against is .314. He is getting absolutely slaughtered. Like, everybody's an all-star against Brandon Bernardino. is basically what's going on. So he was a scrap heap guy, one of the few bright spots in the Bloom tenure. But I think the league has figured him out. He's got that funky delivery. And I just feel like, I mean, he's not in the zone a lot of the time. And I'd be shocked if he's still on this team by next summer. We've struggled quite a bit when it comes to having lefties in the bullpen. I mean, Jolie Rodriguez hasn't worked out too well. Cam Boozer was actually pitching very well out of the pen, but had some elbow inflammation. And I'm looking down. Rich Hill, I don't know if we're going to talk about him. He had one very good outing, and then today just got clobbered. I think it was what Riley Green took him deep. So we'll see, but it's definitely something that'll need to be addressed over this winter.
Do you know what's crazy is Brennan Bernardino would be the perfect candidate to join the Los Angeles Dodgers, add a pitcher, a pitch that he doesn't have, and join the Ryan Brazier experience. It wouldn't surprise me. Since living in LA, I get to watch a lot of Dodgers games. I watch as many Red Sox games and Dodgers games as I possibly can. The Dodgers have a very electric and eccentric pitcher named Alex Vesia. If you don't know who he is, look him up and watch him pitch. He is like Mr. Shakes. You see like the head tilt and the head shake and the arms like snorting and like getting ready. Glove goes up to the face. There's so much happening. It's like Chris Rocker meets John Rocker meets like Craig Kimbrell meets John Papelbon. And you're just like, what is happening on the mound right now? Last year, awful, awful, so bad. This year, flip the numbers around, has a sub 2 ERA, has been one of the absolute studs in that bullpen all year long. And I don't know what they did to fix him, but Brennan Bernardino might be able to reap benefits if he ends up joining another team, because I don't think it's going to happen in Boston. He could play himself out of baseball if he stays on the Red Sox another year. It's just not going to happen. Jeremy.
Yeah, the first half of the season is going to keep him in the big leagues because he's got that flash. You know, he was a sub 2 ERA, sub 1 whip guy up until effectively the series I went to on July 4th. In Miami. So he's going to be in the bigs somewhere, but he shouldn't be in the bigs right now with the Red Sox. And I think it just goes again to the depth of the organization where you have Rich Hill pitching out of the bullpen. So there's no other options. And so you're left with no other choice than the hope Bernardino just out of nowhere reverts to form from the first half of the season when there's literally no indication that that's going to happen. So it's a tale of two seasons for me with this player. I mean, we were talking about him being just as mentally tough as he's been. I think we all were agreeing on that. I mean, I was on the midweek show at that time, but maybe even mentioning him as one of the best left-handed relievers in baseball. Like, he was that good in big spots. I think in like a 10-day period, he was put in a game like three times where there was less than two outs with men on third and none of them scored. I mean, he was unbelievable, and it wasn't clean innings. And I think my take at the time was, give the guy a clean inning. Don't make it so hard on him. But they didn't, and he continually came through. So that portion of a season, he's going to be in the big leagues. And I don't have a reason to believe it won't be with the Red Sox. But if you're going into this series and you're 3.5 back and you're scuffling and you've got to have a move there in place where you can bring up somebody that throws hard and gives you a better chance, because this guy doesn't. And I wish I knew the answer, because I think he's been healthy. I don't remember any commentary about an injury. So I don't know if it's his arm slot, his pace is quickened or slowed through his delivery. In other words, it's a mechanical thing, which is what I think it is. But I don't know. Love for a beat writer to ask specifically Cora, or if they can get into the Bailey's office and ask him. I don't think we'll get a straight answer, but maybe we will, because I mean, it's just that bad, and it's just so different from the first half of the season.
Yeah, T.
This is Bernardino's third year in the league. How old do you think he is?
Oh, we know he's old. He's got to be 33.
Oh, well, you're pretty close, Charlie. He'll be 33 in January.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I remember someone said he was an old rookie.
A very Ryan Brazier-esque guy in terms of age and pathways and all that. I don't want to get into a full-blown Andrew Bailey thing, but something's not right with him. Like, there's a disconnect there, and hopefully they figure it out at least by the end of spring training next year. I have noticed Bayo, the turnaround for him is he's gone back to the four-seamer. And now that he's throwing that, he's kind of reverting back to form. Pivetta has been throwing more four-seamers than anyone. But so maybe they are kind of reevaluating things from an analytical standpoint with some of these guys. But we're not seeing it with Bernardino. And I like Bernardino. And like you guys said, I mean, he was a popular name for future closer. Because you're losing Kenley, like that would get brought up. I wasn't sure I totally agreed with it, but you know, I could see why people were high on him. So he's been absolutely terrible, one of your worst relievers since the All-Star break. So hopefully, I mean, we've got today's September 1st, the date that we're recording this. So maybe he can end the season on a better note, but it's been rough.
Absolutely. A couple of dishonorable mentions in this one. Sogar 0-for-4, 3 strikeouts. Rob Refsnyder 0-for-8, 2 strikeouts. Had a bad misplay out in left field as well. That was brutal. That's 0-for-12 right there. Tyler O'Neill just had a solo home run. For those keeping score, that's now 1-for-18 with a solo home run. Danny Jansen 0-for-5. You're starting to see the trend here. And, you know, Rich Hill, 2 innings, allowed 2 runs on a hit. Did strike out 3, but, you know, maybe we should celebrate the fact that now we have an extra arm in here. Father Time is back in baseball. But, you know, there was so many offers in this series. That was pretty hard, you know. In those names alone, 1-for-23 with a solo home run. A lot of strikeouts. 9 strikeouts. It's brutal. It's brutal. So that, and then also, Terry, I know that you want to touch up on Breslow for a beat here.
Yeah, so I don't want to turn this into a full-blown thing either, but not a lot has gone right, as we've covered ad nauseum. And I think he made one of his biggest blunders of the season this week with the September call-ups. I mean, you go back to last winter, there's risk when it comes to signing free agents. There's risk when it comes to trades. And maybe he's not comfortable with that. I don't know. Then at the deadline, nothing impactful. So perhaps he's still not comfortable with the risk of trading big prospects. But when it comes to September call-ups, there's no risk whatsoever. And the biggest missed opportunity we have was not calling up Christian Campbell, a power-hitting second baseman. Second base is a black hole for the Red Sox. The only guy who gave you anything was David Hamilton when he was up against righties. That's the only time we've gotten anything out of second base. And I looked it up. At that position, we have the lowest batting average in Major League Baseball. The Red Sox rank 30th right now at second base, hitting at a 192 batting average. So you could have called up Campbell. There's no risk in doing it. If he's not ready, he's not ready. But you're not going to get anything anyway. So you may as well give the kid a shot. The dude can hit dingers. Maybe his presence will energize the team if he gets off on the right foot. And you can kind of get an idea of what that position might look like next year. There's no risk whatsoever. But instead, who do we get? We get Emmanuel Valdez, who is not a major leaguer, who's another lefty on a team loaded with lefties. Like, are we even trying at this point? Like, Breslow, he just can't. I can't be confident in that guy. I thought Bloom was pretty stupid. I think Breslow is way worse.
Does a September call-up start the clock on a guy like
I don't believe Campbell? So. I'm pretty sure it does not.
So if it doesn't start the clock, then I agree with what you're saying. If it does, then I don't.
Well, look at it this way. It's a different game now, and I think anybody that's worth keeping here for the bulk of their career, they're going to get that extension early. We're not going to get another Raffy Devers 11th hour and then we hose ourselves. So I don't think service time's a big deal anymore. I think by your second winter, you're going to have an extension.
Here's the thing. I've been feeling like we haven't really been trying for a little while now. No additions, no reinforcements. And then the pieces that you bring up, we already know what they are. Or we know what they're capable of, more than likely. So I don't know. I'm judging Breslow on a couple of moves, and I haven't even given him a full, you know, we haven't even given Breslow half the time that, you know, Chaim Bloom's been here. And Chaim Bloom made some really dumb moves. Some of our former co-hosts, like, it's not even worth repeating their name because they're still irrelevant. They're huge supporters of them, and they're wrong. They got their hand in, foot in mouth syndrome, and it's they make themselves look stupid. I don't even have to, you know, do anything. They're just digging their own grave. But Breslow, as bad as it's been, is it safe to say it's bad already, or do we say, you know, maybe we need to give you another year to make up for everything that's happened? You know, you made some mistakes. Your feet are getting wet now. You're very green. You decided to make a move with one of the smartest teams in baseball and got spanked for it. Do we give him another chance? I'm 50-50. If he stays, I'm not necessarily against it, but I would need to see a major, major improvement in offseason, trade deadline, everything. Yeah, Tico.
Well, number one, he sucks at everything. So far, nothing is smart. Like, I don't see how other executives on other teams are looking at him right now saying, this guy's brilliant. The Red Sox have a bright future because of this guy. Nobody is saying that across the league. Number two, yeah, he probably will get another year, but I think that's it. I don't think he's going to get any more than that. If he just completely whiffs the offseason and then the following trade deadline, I don't think they're going to keep him. It was a science project because an unprecedented number of executives had no interest in coming here. That's the only reason he got that job.
Interesting take, that's for sure. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and it's sadly not wrong. When you have people that were, you know, highly, highly touted, highly respected, and they're saying, no, not interested. That looks really bad. That's brutal. So maybe this was just like, all right, cool. Yeah, we're picking you, but maybe it's because there was no one else. You know, maybe that's the truth.
Yeah, this is a fun topic. But it's not happening. Ownership isn't going to do it, and they're not going to admit their own failures, which is what they'd have to do. So it ain't happening, gentlemen.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way that they would have to do it if they did it is they'd have to quietly identify one or two people, contact them on the hush-hush, and say, would you be interested? That's the only way it could happen. Like,
and
they can't do a full scale search this year. The same people are going to say no. So I mentioned the guy, Zach Scott, I think is interesting. He's been in the front office prior to just a few years ago, like at least 10 years previously in the front office. So, and when you go back to the Sherrington era, like in the weeks leading up to it, they said, nope, he's our guy. He's not going anywhere. We're not pivoting, nothing. And then Dombrowski became available. And then out of nowhere, on like a Wednesday night in August, right after the deadline, they announced it on NESN that Dave Dombrowski had been hired. That's how it has to happen. But I don't, like Jeremy said, we're stuck with him, I think, for at least one more year. The only other thing, and I think this could happen, they could bring someone else in and just tell Breslow, you're working with this guy. The two of you can figure it out. But I, other than that, I don't.
Yeah, I think honestly we could talk all night about this. So
yeah, we got all winter to do it.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So we are going to shift over into our studs. So Terry, take it away.
I am going with Mr. MVP, Jaren Duran, hit a home run in the first game, basically kind of put the game somewhat out of reach in extra innings. You know, the Tigers just, you had to figure weren't going to have the offense to string together three runs in one inning. But yeah, just kind of put it out of reach. Had a hit in every game. Didn't really do anything spectacular beyond that. Did drive in the only run, I guess, on Sunday. They strung together some hits on Brisky, who I know nothing about. He was their opener today. But a positive series, 5-13, continuing that upward trend. I meant to have his updated WAR situation. Last I checked, he was in third, comfortably ahead of Juan Soto and Gunnar Henderson, just slightly behind Bobby Witt. But obviously, it's even if Aaron Judge doesn't play another game for the rest of the season, he'll still go on to be MVP. But still, just off the charts, completely unforeseen. And man, I don't know. I mean, it's too early to talk Cooperstown, but man, if he finds that power stroke and just is a perennial all-star from here out, man, what a story.
Yeah, it would be pretty special. That's for sure. Jeremy, why don't you weigh in?
Let's go easy with the Cooperstown talk off of 1 year. Now, with that said, he is my favorite Boston Red Sox. He's so easy to root for. The whole offense got shut down, and it didn't matter to him. Terry gave the numbers. The guy's just unbelievable. You know, and he's a better defender than I thought he was, and I don't think he has a great arm, but he really puts himself in a position and is a pretty accurate thrower and has had some outfield assists, so he's kind of surprised me on that aspect of his game. I mean, I hope he's here for a long time, and I hope Terry's right that at some point we are talking about Cooperstown because he puts this together for 5 to 8 years. And I mean, at these numbers, I never said this, but throughout the year, I kept kind of checking to see if this was real. I mean, guys, we're now in September. It's real. This season has been unbelievable by this player. He is unbelievable. He makes this team by himself fun to watch. And I'm really glad he's a Red Sox. And again, when you get completely shut down and yet, you know, you're still hitting 346 or whatever, 5-13 equals, I mean, it's just incredibly impressive by a really good player.
Before yeah. Charlie weighs in real quick, so according to ESPN, and different sites measure WAR differently, he actually is second now. He's just a tenth of a point above Bobby Witt now. 8.8 for Duran, 8.7 for Witt, and Judge is 9.8 above Duran, so a full point. Speaking on the defense that Jeremy brings up, of the top, let's see, the top 11 that I have here on the screen, by far the best defensive WAR. He's got a 2.5 defensive WAR. The next closest is Matt Chapman, who's perennially one of the best defensive players in MLB. So, and I always said he seemed like he had Johnny Damon arm, you know, not very good, but great range. You know, he'll get to those fly balls and line drives and what have you. But it's improved. He's got a better arm than Damon, probably a better arm than even Ellsbury at this point. So the dude's a total package. And with this surge in power, he's hit, what, 22, 23 home runs now? He's a five-tool guy.
Yeah, he's had two consistent months. If you're looking at the numbers right now in the year, 21 homers, 70 RBIs. He's hitting 295, a number that he matched last year. But he's just incredibly exceeded expectations. And Terry, real quick, I don't think WAR is calculated in a different manner. I think different websites update them at different times. I think that's all it is. Like ESPN, for example, will never give you up-to-date game stats until the following day. So if someone has a three-homer game, you won't see that number rectify until the following day. You'll see it on his overall number. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Baseball Reference and FanGraphs definitely don't do it the same. That's why you have B WAR and you have F WAR. So that's why I just threw out the disclaimer.
Yeah, but you're totally right. I mean, he's above Bobby Witt. He's above Henderson, above Soto, above Ohtani. But it's not really that far-fetched. I mean, yeah, Ohtani's a 40-40 guy. He's 43 homers, 44 homers, 43 stolen bases, if I'm not mistaken, because he had a home run yesterday. He doesn't play the field, so it wouldn't make sense to have, and he's not pitching, so it wouldn't make sense to have him exceeding everybody else. Jeremy took the words out of my mouth. I mean, I find myself really curious to see, like, okay, how did Jaren Duran do? Okay, we scored two runs. Okay, I'm sure he did something. Did he steal a base? Did he steal home? Did he knock somebody in? Did he score? Like, what did he do? Because he's that dynamic. During the series, they had mentioned that Jaren Duran had made history, and then I couldn't find the exact numbers, so our resident stat guy, Steve, brought it up to us earlier. Duran launched a leadoff homer in the bottom of the first inning. It was his 20th home run of the year when it happened. In doing so, Duran became the first player in Major League Baseball since 1901 to record 20 homers, 40 doubles, 10 triples, 30 stolen bases in the same season. That is incredible. That is incredible. So the guy's just, he ain't missing. He's getting it done. So, yeah. I mean, this is going to be, you know, this isn't the numbers with the triples and the stolen bases. Those aren't going to be things that stay with him in 10 years. But he's still going to be very, very dynamic for the next couple seasons, no question. He's one of the, you know, league leaders in total bases. And if he actually had 30 home runs, he'd probably be in the top two. He's that good. So Duran is in the category of if he goes 0 for 12 or 0 for 13 in the series, I'd feel a little dirty mentioning him as a dud just because of what he's able to do all year long. Jaren Duran, before today's action, this month, 33 for 107, 7 home runs, 15 RBIs, 9 stolen bases, 308 batting average with a 368 on base. Month before, 33 for 108. One at-bat difference, 4 homers, 14 RBIs, 3 stolen bases, hit 306 with a 356 on base. What I'm getting here is that he's very consistent month in and month out. He may have a couple dud weeks, a couple dud games, a dud series, whatever, but the guy is super consistent and is absolutely someone that we look forward to seeing. And if we're going to play really, really well and have a really good game, he needs to be at the forefront of that. Yeah, Jeremy.
Yeah, to your point, Duran's been a dud numerous times. And the reason for that is really simple. When he doesn't hit for a 3 or 4 game series, we don't win. And it becomes even that much more magnified where we have to bring it up, even though at no point have we been negative at all about Duran. And every time we do it, I say that same thing. But that, I mean, he's that important to the series by series success of the 24 Red Sox.
Yeah, real quick. So to Jeremy's point, just to go over everything over the last, you know, 3-4 weeks, starting with the Houston series, 3 for 11, we get swept. Texas only had that one game in there, 1 for 5. Baltimore, we had a 4-game set, 4 for 19. In the two games that he did damage, 4 for 10. The two games that he didn't hit, 0-9. We lost both. Houston, two games we won, 5-6. One home run, two RBIs. Game we lost, 1-4. Also had a home run. Arizona series, we got swept, 1-10. Toronto, we won two games of the three. That's an anomaly one because he did everything he possibly could to win us that game. In the game that we lost, he went 3-4. In the two games that we won, 3-7. And then we lost, of course, the last game of that series going, you know, we lost 2-0 and he went 0-4. So yeah, Jeremy, you're absolutely right. If he's on, we have a much better chance of winning that game. If he's not, we're not going to get it done. Terry, go ahead.
Yeah. So since the All-Star break, Duran is tied in MLB in doubles with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's also tied overall for the season right now with Alec Boehm, but Duran's been having the hotter second half. Devers, surprisingly, number three on that list. So it's just too bad he's having his slumps. But since the All-Star break, also, Duran's hitting at a 321 clip with a 381 on base. Where is he in home runs? Let's see. Yeah, he's not even near the top, unfortunately. And then, you know, he's been neck and neck with Bobby Witt in the, you know, in the WAR stat. And I mentioned how he's just barely above him. And I was just kind of looking to see where Witt is better. And Witt has 9 more home runs. So there's a bit of a power thing there. And OPS, Witt is about 180 points higher. So clearly stands out in a couple other ways. Duran also strikes out a lot more than Witt does. Duran has 136 strikeouts on the year. Witt only 93. So those are some differences between the two, but they're both, you know, impacting their teams in a very prolific way.
Absolutely. Jeremy.
Are we ready for my stud? All right. So in a series in which we, for the first time, really, at least from a Red Sox perspective, got to see what an ace looks like in Skubal, it was refreshing to see Houck pitch well. Again, important series, important start. One we won, although he didn't get the win because of Bernardino. Jansen got the win. Martin got the save. Houck came out and pitched like a guy that's a number two. 6 innings, 3 hits, no runs, obviously none earned, 2 walks, 6 Ks, 95 pitches. Lowered his ERA to 3.12, 1.17 whip. And he's doing it, again, extending his innings limit. So it's a good sign that he's not flaming out, in my opinion. God, we just can't find ways to win games when he pitches. And you've already talked about Bernardino, so I'm not going to get into it, but he deserved to win this game. He pitched well enough to win the game. He didn't blow out the pitch count, so he should be good for his next start. It's an encouraging sign for 2024, although we're dead in the water. But it's a really encouraging sign that he's this far past his innings limit and he's still pitching, or at least in this outing at the end of August, he's pitching effectively. So really good sign from Tanner Houck.
Terry.
His ERA since the All-Star break was an even 6. So it was definitely a big step in the right direction for him. And this is a team where it should be a step in the right direction. I mean, Tigers have a very mediocre offense outside of Kelly Carpenter, Riley Green. There's just not a lot of scary guys in there that can hurt you. But, you know, he went 6 strong, only 3 hits, walked a couple, struck out 6. The strikeouts have been kind of low in various starts, only 1 and 2 strikeout performances. So to see him get back up to 6 was really good. You guys mentioned, you know, if Devers, I mean, if we fall out of it, I would certainly skip at least one or two starts for Hauk just to take care of him a little bit. He's already blown past the previous high in innings. So, I mean, the fact that he's this far above it and still grinding away, giving you a chance to win, that's a very positive sign. Cutter Crawford didn't pitch this series. He'll go in the Met series, but he's kind of in the same boat. So we'll see what happens there. But it was a great series for Hauk. I mean, the first couple innings, his only base runner allowed was a walk. And actually in the third inning, he had two hit by pitches, which seems to be happening quite a bit this year. And he didn't even give up a hit until, let's see, the fifth inning. Zach McKinstry led off the inning with a single. Parker Meadows got a single. But it was a borderline dominant performance from Hauk, aside from just a couple of hit-by-pitches.
That's now one win so far, spanning his last 13 total games played. Tanner Hauk has done that quality start thing, the expectation thing of a starting pitcher, 7 times each time this month, except for one. So going back until the All-Star break, or since the All-Star break, however you want to phrase it, he's pitched in 8 games, 7. He has gone 6 innings or more. Now, only one game did he go more than 6 innings and actually record an out past the 6th. But he's doing everything that we need, you know, Jeremy, to be. And it's incredibly frustrating that we can't win more games for him. A game like that, 6 innings, no runs allowed, can't get the win for him. You know, we were able to do it against Oakland. We shut out Oakland 7-0. We got the win there. And that was his last win. That was before the All-Star break. And since that, his last win before that was June 13th, something we've talked about before. And he's had struggle months. Like, this month has been a struggle. He's had 2 clunker appearances where he's allowed 6 runs in the appearance. Yeah, you deserve to take the L when you allow 6. But when you allow 1, 2, or 3 or no runs, he has a perfect record of 0-0. He doesn't have a win. That's just not good enough. So it's basically, if he allows 6 runs, he loses the game. If he allows less than 6 runs, we don't win for him. It's really frustrating, but again, you know, I'm not going to knock him. He did fantastic. 6 innings. He did what you were supposed to, you know, do as a starter. 6 innings, struck out 6, allowed 3 hits. He did his job. That's it. Anything else we want to add? All right, my guy, Connor Wong. Now, I don't want to just talk about the offense side, because the first game obviously had the home run, had a double, and only went 1-for-6 for the remainder of the series, had an error. But we talk about the best ability, and some people will argue what that is, but the best ability is availability. We've talked about this a couple times before. And multi-versatility. The guy caught in the first game, played second base in the second game, and then played left field and caught the third game. This reminds me of when Joe Maddon in Chicago is having all these players play multiple positions. Kyle Schwarber was catching, playing first, playing left field. Chris Bryant was playing third, playing first, probably playing second. Ben Zobrist was playing short, second in the out. Like, he was all over the place with all these positions. He wanted everyone to be able to play everywhere, essentially. And Connor Wong is willing to do whatever it takes to help this team. Overall, 3-for-10 in the series, 1 home run, a pair of RBIs, you know, drew a walk, struck out a couple times. But you know what? You're doing whatever you have to do, whether it be offensively or playing in a specific position that you are not familiar with. I cannot appreciate that enough. So Connor Wong, my stud for this one. Terry, why don't you win first?
Kyle Teal is coming, and it'll probably be next season. And so this is a good opportunity to kind of see what you can do with Connor Wong. I mean, they've always flirted with the idea of moving him around that right side of the infield. I've pointed out recently that Blake Swihart saw some time in the outfield, and I think Connor Wong is a very athletic catcher. probably one of the more athletic catchers in MLB. So
and fast.
Yeah, absolutely. The dude has some wheels. So I don't mind the tinkering at this point. And I don't think we're making the playoffs anyway. So if it costs us a game because of an epic outfield blunder, so be it. I just wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing him do it. And he's a righty, so that makes him valuable. It makes it worth tinkering with. You got the guy Vaughn Grissom down in the minors, and I'm sure we'll see him again eventually, but he's a guy we're not particularly high on. The Braves were thinking about putting him in their outfield before the Chris Sale trade just to find a spot for him. Who would you rather have in your outfield? Who would you rather mess around with that with? Connor Wong or Vaughn Grissom?
Oh, I think this is unfortunately answer A is Connor and B is that guy Wong. There is no other option. You're not going to toy with Grissom. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, my big takeaway is how unselfish the player is. And then number two, which Terry already hit on, which is, I mean, his athleticism. This isn't Mookie Betts, who's playing right field, then second base, then shortstop. Like, he came up a middle infielder, eventually found his way as a right fielder, and that's a different type of athlete. This guy's a catcher, you know? And then the other thing is, and just, you know, maybe Terry's ready to go to just ether me on this, but I don't see that he doesn't hit because he's in left field randomly, or he's at second base, or he's at first base. Like, he's been pretty consistent offensively. He hasn't been as good in the second half as he was in the first half. No one's going to disagree with that. The numbers bear that out. But, you know, he goes out there. Wherever Cora puts him, he plays. He says absolutely nothing negative to the media. I like the player. I don't see a reason because Teal's coming up that you move on from him, especially if he's willing to be this versatile. Because at the end of the day, you might be able to, for a short period of time, keep an extra arm in the bullpen. Let's say you're running high on innings and you just need another arm. Instead of bringing up a backup infielder, you just kind of keep Connor Wong around and go put an extra guy in the bullpen, you know? So he creates so much roster flexibility where within the new rules, and especially the way the Red Sox want to play, and because he'll steal you back. I mean, he's not going to go get you 30, but, you know, he's selectively aggressive. And when he is, he's pretty good. So, I mean, look, I've been on Connor Wong the whole year. I was furious every time McGuire got a start, certainly if he got two in one series. He's your catcher, and he needs to be in the lineup, and Terry already said it, because he's a righty, and we're so left-handed and balanced. So, you know, I'm a Connor Wong guy, I really am. And, again, I like Teal. I'm glad he's in our organization, but he's a known commodity. Teal, while he is highly rated and will likely be a good pro, we don't know until he becomes a pro. So we know Connor Wong is a good pro. And I see no reason to move on from Connor Wong unless it's 2 years from now and Teal hit 286 with 2580 and, you know, an OPS 780. You know, then okay, fine. You know, and if he's playing every day and whatever. But, you know, Connor Wong should be here, and I really like the player.
I'm excited to see what happens with Teal. Don't get me wrong, but there is no replacement for, you know, proven talent, and he's only gotten better. You know, with every additional opportunity that we've given Wong, he's doing whatever he has to do to show and prove his worth. If you look at his numbers year over year, there is improvement. 2021, 4-for-13, limited sample size, 308. Following season, in 27 games, hit 188, had a home run, 7 RBIs. Kid's young, 26 years old, year 27, year 3, 9 homers, 36 RBIs, able to pop, 235. Okay. Drawn a couple walks, much appreciated. This year, has played 21 less games, has 3 more home runs, 10 more RBIs, an additional walk, has cut his strikeout numbers down. The batting average is also up to 283, and his on base is another 50 points above that. There is absolutely no way I'm saying anything bad about Connor Wong, especially at his position of importance. And as you mentioned, Terry, being a right-handed power bat for the, you know, when it's there, the power can sometimes be there. So yeah, I don't think there's any reason why we should be moving on from somebody like this. Anything else that we want to add? Excellent. So a couple of honorable mentions here. Nick Pivetta also had a nice start, 6 innings, allowed 2 runs, struck out 6, did pretty well, another quality start. Unfortunately, we couldn't get it done for him. Slayton, 2/3 of an inning, struck out a batter. Weissert, 2/3 of an inning, allowed a pair of hits. Chase Shugart had 2 strikeouts in 2 innings. And Criswell, the biggest surprise, I think, of the list, 4 innings, no hits, 5 punch outs. So anything else that we want to add from that list? All right. That is going to do it for the Bastards. Everyone have a great one. Take care.